Well, good morning. Let me thank all of you for being here this morning. Since the clock officially in this hearing room states 10 o'clock, we're going to get started at this time. Let us come to order and go on the record. I'm Commissioner Floyd B. McKissick, Jr. with the North Carolina Utilities Commission, and I've been assigned to preside over this hearing. With me this morning are Commissioners Tenola D. Brown-Bland and Karen Kamerite. I now call for hearing docket G5 sub 642, which is the matter of application of Public Service Company of North Carolina, hereinafter referred to as Times as Public Service, for annual review of gas costs pursuant to North Carolina General Statute 62-133.4 subsection C and Commission Rule 117 subsections K6. General Statute 62-133.4 authorizes gas cost adjustment proceedings for natural gas local distribution companies. General Statute 62-133.4 subsection C provides that the Utilities Commission shall conduct annual review proceedings to compare each natural gas utility's prudently incurred costs with costs recovered from all of the utility's customers served during the test period. Commission Rule R-117 subsection K-6 prescribes the procedures for such annual reviews of natural gas costs. On March 22, 2022, the Commission issued an order directing Public Service and the Public Service staff to include in their testimony specific testimony about Public Service's design day demand methodology and its design winter load duration curve. On June 1, 2022, Public Service filed direct testimony of Rose M. Jackson and Gloria J. Krill of Public Service in this annual review proceeding. On June 17, 2022, Public Service filed supplemental direct testimony in exhibit of Gloria J. Krill. On June 8, 2022, the Commission issued an order scheduling hearing, requiring filing of testimony, establishing discovery guidelines, and requiring public notice, which I will refer to as the scheduling order. The order scheduled the hearing for this date, Tuesday, August 9, 2022, at 10 a.m. On July 8, 2022, Haw River Assembly filed a petition to intervene, which was granted by order issued on July 15, 2022. On July 25, 2022, the public staff filed testimony in appendices of Dustin R. Mertz, John L. Dorgan, Sonia R. Johnson, and Jordan A. Nader. On July 29, 2022, Public Service filed affidavits of publication of public notice in compliance with the scheduling order. On August 3, 2022, Public Service and the public staff filed a joint motion stating that there are no contested issues between them in this docket. They requested that their witnesses be excused from testifying today and that the witnesses' pre-filed testimony be received into evidence. On August 5, 2022, the Commission issued an order excusing the public staff's witnesses but requiring Public Service's witnesses to attend the hearing and testify. In compliance with the requirements of Chapter 163A of the State Government Ethics Act, I remind the members of the Commission of their responsibility to avoid conflicts of interest, and I inquire whether any member has a conflict of interest with respect to the matter before us this morning. Let the record reflect that I have no such conflict and that my fellow commissioners have not identified any such conflicts. I now call for appearances of counsel, beginning with Public Service.
Good morning, commissioners. I'm Mary Lynn Grigg with the law firm of McGuire Woods, appearing on behalf of Public Service Company in North Carolina.
Good morning, Presiding Commissioner McKissick. This is David Neal of the Southern Environmental Law Center, appearing on behalf of Haw River Assembly.
Very good. Good morning, I'm Gina Holt with the public staff here on behalf of the using and consuming public. And with me, appearing with me today is public staff attorney David Little.
All right, are there any preliminary matters which need to be addressed prior to the beginning of the hearing?
No, sir.
If not, let us proceed. Has the, at this point in time, I'd like to know if the public staff has identified any public witnesses that need to testify today.
I have not.
Okay. Let the record reflect that no witnesses have been identified by the public staff. And are there any members of the public in the hearing room this morning who wish to testify in this proceeding? If so, if you would come forward at this time, let the record reflect that no public witnesses were present at the hearing room at the commencement of this hearing. Ms. Riggs, you may proceed with the presentation of public services witnesses.
Thank you, Commissioner McKissick. PSNC calls as a panel Ms. Rose Jackson and Ms. Glory Creel to the stand. Good morning.
Good morning.
We'll start with Ms. Jackson today. Ms. Jackson, would you please state your name and business address for the record?
My name is Rose M. Jackson, and my business address is 220 Operation Way, Casey, South Carolina.
By whom are you employed and in what capacity?
I'm employed by Dominion Energy Services Incorporated as the Director of Gas Supply Services.
Did you cause to be pre-filed in this docket on June 1st, 2022? Direct testimony and question and answer form consisting of 19 pages and three exhibits, of which the attachment to exhibit two was confidential.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, let me do one thing before we proceed with your formal testimony. If we could go ahead and get you sworn in.
I was wondering. I didn't know if something had changed.
No.
That would be appropriate.
Yeah, put your left hand on the Bible, raise your right hand. Do you swear the president, which you're about to present, is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, sir, I do.
Thank you. Now you can proceed.
Thank you, sir.
All right, and we'll do the same when she gets ready to testify.
Yes,
go right ahead.
If I ask you the questions in your direct testimony today, would your answers be the same?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you have a summary of your testimony?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
Would you please read it now?
Good morning, Commissioners. I discuss in my testimony the gas supply policies and procedures of PSNC doing business as Dominion Energy North Carolina. The purpose of my testimony is to demonstrate that all PSNC gas costs were prudently incurred during the review period ended March 31st, 2022, and therefore meet the requirement for recovery. PSNC system and its gas supply procurement policy are designed to serve firm customers reliably on a design day. In providing sales service, the company must acquire supplies of natural gas and arrange for their delivery to PSNC system. The most appropriate description of PSNC's procurement policy has been and continues to be a best cost supply strategy. This strategy is based upon three primary criteria: supply security, operational flexibility, and the cost of gas. PSNC is committed to acquiring cost-effective supplies of natural gas while maintaining the necessary security and flexibility to serve our customers. PSNC acquires capacity to meet its customers' demand. PSNC's design day demand forecast projects firm customer load and is used to determine total asset needs. This forecast is updated annually, and capacity alternatives are evaluated on an ongoing basis. If needed, PSNC secures incremental transportation and or storage capacity to meet the growth requirements of its firm sales customers consistent with its best cost strategy. To acquire long-term expansion capacity precisely in balance with customer needs is impossible due to the many external factors beyond the company's control. In assessing the type of resources needed to meet its design day demand, PSNC attempts to minimize the per unit delivered gas cost. This analysis incorporates any transportation charges, storage cost, and supplier reservation fees required to deliver gas to PSNC system, as well as the reliability and timing of new services. PSNC also utilizes a hedging program to help mitigate natural gas price volatility at a reasonable cost. The hedging program meets this objective by using financial instruments such as call options or futures. In conclusion, it is my opinion that all of PSNC's gas costs were prudently incurred under its gas supply acquisition policy, and I respectfully request that those costs be approved. Thank you.
Commissioner McKissick, I move that Ms. Jackson's direct testimony be copied into the record as if given orally from the stand, and that her three exhibits be marked for identification as pre-filed.
Without objection, your motion's allowed.
Thank you, sir. Now we'll call Ms. Creel.
Okay. Ms. Creel, if you place your left hand in the Bible, raise your right hand. Do you swear the testimony you might provide the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, sir, I do.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Please state your name and business address for the record.
It's Glory Creel, 800 Gaston Road, Gastonia, North Carolina.
By whom are you employed and in what capacity?
Dominion Energy Services, and I am a senior analyst in the Rates and Regulatory Department.
Did you cause to be pre-filed in this docket on June 1st, 2022, direct testimony and question and answer form consisting of 6 pages and 1 exhibit?
Yes, ma'am.
Did you also cause to be pre-filed in this docket on June 17th, 2022, supplemental testimony and question and answer form consisting of 2 pages and 1 exhibit?
Yes, ma'am.
Are there any corrections you'd like to make to your testimony at this time?
No, ma'am.
If I asked you the questions, the same questions in your direct and supplemental testimony today, would your answers be the same?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you have a summary of your testimony?
Yes, ma'am.
Would you please read that now?
Purpose of my direct testimony is to present the information and the data required pursuant to Commission Rule R1-17K6. The information and data contained in Creel Exhibits 1 and 2 attached to my testimony are based on review period ending March 31st, 2022, as prescribed by the rule. All gas cost accounting during the review period was prepared in accordance with Section 4 and 5 of Rule R1-17K. At the end of the review period, the balance in the sales customer only deferred account was undercollected by $10,922,343. The balance in the hedging deferred account was $9,818,653 due to the sales customers. When these balances are combined, the total balance due from sales customers is $1,103,690. At the end of the review period, and the balance in the all customer deferred account was an under collection of $26,676,209. The company is not proposing new temporary rate increments or decrements in this proceeding. The company will continue to take into consideration the balance in the deferred accounts when evaluating whether to file for a change in the benchmark. In my supplemental testimony, I testified in response to the Commission's June 8th order establishing this proceeding and explained that the company's last general rate case, the Commission approved the company's use of a net of tax interest rate of 6.57 for all deferred accounts adjusted and appropriate for income taxes. I further explained that the company reviewed the deferred account interest rate as part of the proceeding and determined that no adjustment is necessary at the time. This concludes my summary.
Thank you. Commissioner McKissick, I move that Ms. Creel's direct testimony and exhibit and supplemental testimony and exhibit be copied into the record as if given orally from the stand, and that her exhibits be marked for identification as pre-filed.
Without objection, motion is allowed.
Thank you, sir. The witnesses are available for questions.
Thank you.
Presiding Commissioner McKissick, may I have a few cross questions before commission questions?
Sure, go right ahead.
Thank you. Ms. Jackson.
Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just to set the stage, PSNC entered into precedent agreements with MVP and MVP Southgate to meet expected peak day requirements. Isn't that right?
Yes, sir.
And that was incremental capacity of 250,000 decatherms a day. Is that right?
That's correct.
And you also testified that as a result of delays in acquiring MVP capacity, that PSNC continues to contract for short-term peaking capacity. Isn't that right?
Yes, sir.
And is developing plans for constructing a new LNG facility with capacity for 200,000 decatherms a day for approximately 10 days. Is that right?
Yes, sir, but we have been considering an LNG plant because the next tranche of capacity that the company would need would occur approximately that 2030 timeframe. So we have been working on an LNG plant, and now that MVP has been delayed due to ongoing litigation, we're evaluating whether we need to pull up the date of that LNG plant.
But just to clarify, that they're both meeting the same goal, isn't that right? Of meeting peak day demand.
They're meeting the firm customer demand growth that we project on our system.
And Ms. Jackson, did you review the testimony of public staff witness Dustin Metz?
Yes, sir.
And do you recall his testimony on page 5, line 16 to page 6, line 8, regarding the lack of a cost-benefit analysis for the LNG facility?
Can you refer to those pages again? I'm sorry.
Yes, Ms. Jackson. It starts on page 5, line 16, as I recall. And goes on to page 6. And on page 6, line 1, testifies, given the absence of an economic or cost-benefit analysis and potential supply constraints at this time, the public staff cannot determine the optimal resource to meet the company's firm supply needs. Do you remember that testimony?
Yes, sir. I have it.
Great. Do you know when PSNC will propose the detailed economic analysis requested by the public staff in Mr. Metz's testimony?
As Mr. Metz referred to G100 sub 91, the company has ongoing discussions with public staff and with the commission to update them and to apprise them of any changes, not only in our asset mix, but if there's any key changes in the industry overall. So we have agreed and we will continue to do so. We have updated on a continual basis. But I will tell you that right now, as far as an evaluation of assets, to compare assets that are in the marketplace, it's not necessarily just an economic assessment of a cost per delivered decatherm to a customer. Right now, my major concern and the concern of the customer is being able to reliably serve firm customers. So availability has become the key concern. It goes back to, reliability. We have an obligation to serve, and right now it's getting more and more difficult to find assets to serve those firm customers.
At this time, if I could mark one exhibit.
Go right ahead.
If I could mark, this is Hall River Assembly Jackson Cross Exhibit 1. It's an excerpt from the data request responses from the company to Hall River Assembly.
Okay, you may proceed.
All right, Ms. Jackson, you've been handed what's been marked as Hall River Assembly Jackson Cross Exhibit 1, which is an excerpt of non-confidential portions of data request responses to us. If I could direct you to what is page 7, it's the third page, but it's marked as page 7, request 1-20, which asks, with regard to Jackson Direct, page 15, lines 10 to 14, and PSNC's plans to construct a new LNG facility with up to 200,000 decatherms a day of withdrawal capacity for approximately 10 days. Skipping down, can you read the request under Part D of 1-20?
Has PSNC modeled the cost for meeting design day requirements with the new proposed LNG facility compared to gas on MVP Southgate, considering an apples-to-apples comparison that considers the cost of gas on MVP Southgate for meeting design day requirements? If so, please provide that cost comparison. If not, how does PSNC evaluate the cost of different strategies for meeting design day requirements?
And if you skip ahead to page 8, your company's response to D is the very last item. Can you read the response of the company?
Yes, sir. PSNC has not performed an apples-to-apples comparison of the new proposed LNG facility and flowing gas on MVP Southgate. Such a comparison cannot be done because the options provide two different levels of service. The new proposed LNG facility will provide a 10-day peaking option, while the MVP Southgate capacity will provide year-round service. Additionally, the commodity cost of gas supply obtained through MVP Southgate is projected to be lower than Gulf Coast gas supply.
So, Ms. Jackson, it's PSNC's position that it's not possible to compare the costs of MVP Southgate for meeting expected design day requirements with the cost of a new LNG facility to meet those same design day requirements?
No, sir. The question, if you go back to page 7, 1-20D, it states, the new proposed LNG compared to gas on MVP Southgate considering an apples-to-apples comparison. And our response is that an apples-to-apples comparison cannot be done because you're looking at an LNG facility that provides 10 days of service versus the MVP Southgate project that will provide 365 days a year of service. And in the event that we are not able to bring in Marcellus Shale gas, then we're looking at Transco Gulf Coast gas. So those commodity costs are going to be different, but they're just different assets. It's comparing an apple to an orange.
And in this case, the apple is the PSN, the purpose of the apple is to meet design day requirements. Isn't that right?
Yes, sir.
And the purpose of the orange is to meet design day requirements. Isn't that right?
Yes, sir.
And do you recall in last year's annual gas cost docket, the testimony of Gregory Lander in docket G5 sub 635?
I don't recall the specifics, but yes, I remember his testimony.
And you recall, recognizing that PSNC didn't agree with his testimony, but do you recall a significant portion of his testimony related to an all-in cost analysis method that would enable an apples-to-apples comparison of respective costs of alternative means for achieving a defined goal?
I recall some of the statements that he made, and I also recall that I disagreed with his evaluation and his comparison of the different types of assets.
Right. Recognizing that you didn't agree with his conclusions, he did provide a methodology for how one might go about making such a comparison. Isn't that right?
And I found flaws in that suggested methodology.
And at this time, presiding Commissioner McKissick, we would just take judicial notice of the testimony offered in last year's annual gas cost docket, G5 sub 635, of Gregory M. Lander.
Appropriate, duly noted, allowed.
Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you.
Does public staff have any questions?
I'm sorry. If it's at the appropriate time, I would move admission of the exhibit, but I'm
allowed, if no objections.
Thank you.
I have no questions.
No questions. Any redirect?
No, sir.
All right. There being no redirect, will we now proceed with commission questions? And some of these you are familiar with, others you may not be as acquainted with. There was an attachment A to the order entered on August 5th, which yes, identified three subject matters of inquiry. So initially, we're going to direct those questions to Ms. Creel. However, if there other comments you'd like to join in and make, feel free to do so. The first one, and I'll just kind of restate it for the record. Number one, comparing the schedules in this proceeding with those filed in last year's annual review of gas docket G5 sub 635, the commission notes that gas loss facility damage set forth on Schedule 4 of Creel Exhibit 1 in sub 635 is not shown on this year's schedule. Explain this change and why it was not noted in testimony regarding accounting changes occurring during the review period in either 635 or in the present docket. And so if you could go ahead and state for the record, you know, first what the item represented and why it wasn't in this year's particular filing.
That was for the facility damages line item, and I'll read kind of the answer to that, and then we can go back if we need to on the damage definition. But just to clarify, this is not an accounting change. PSNC had a general ledger system change from PeopleSoft to SAP effective January 2021. In our discussions with the public staff, we identify that those costs are now included in the commodity costs. and therefore no longer needed to be included in the miscellaneous charge line on Schedule 4. The charges moved from the miscellaneous charge line, and they're now included on the Schedule 3 summary of commodity gas costs.
So essentially, it was just a change in the way it was being reported?
It's just a change from one schedule to another.
Okay. And what precisely did it represent?
So
we have that in the record as well.
Facility damages are just third-party damages to the loss of, a damage to an actual facility. Any of those losses are charged to that third party.
Okay.
For example, it would be a dig-in on one of our pipeline facilities that was caused by a third-party contractor, a third-party entity. It won't be a contractor, but a third party that didn't have the lines marked per se, and then they dug into our line. So we lose gas as part of that process.
Okay. And what we'll do is move into the next subject matter of inquiry. It appears to the commission that for most months of sub 635 and the present review period, that the dollar amount of facility damages shown on Schedule 3 were determined by applying the applicable benchmark cost of gas to the facility damage volumes shown on Schedule 10. However, the commission noted some amounts that require explanation. Could you explain why the amount shown on Schedule 3 in the present docket for the months of June through September of 2021 are the same as the amounts shown on Schedule 3 in sub 635 for the months of June through September of 2020, and also explain why the calculated cost of gas for March of 2020, October 2021, and November of 2021 do not agree with the benchmark cost of gas for these months? And going back to the earlier component of this question, it looks as if there were different volumes, but the costs were the same in your report.
So with the general ledger system change that I previously mentioned in the last question, due to the timing of that change, accounting recorded 2020 actual facility damages to estimate their 2021 facility damages. And then those estimates were replaced with actuals during the month of November 2021. And then for the March 2020 and October 2021, the volumes were priced at the applicable benchmark in place at the time when the damages occurred. And as we previously stated, when we replaced the actuals in November 2021, we took those gas loss credits and dollars billed and applied those to the applicable benchmark for those months. So if you look at Schedule 3, for example, if you looked at the column for March, that is going to be the February billed dollars with the February benchmark.
Okay. And you said in the first part of your answer that originally there were estimates used and that you came back and plugged in costs, actual costs.
Right, so they had to use those estimates until November, and then in November they did a true up from January to October.
Okay, thank you. And the other subject of inquiry was with respect to information provided on other cost of gas charges or the credits shown on Schedule 4. The commission notes that in both the current docket and in sub 635, public staff witness Dorgan discussed various components but did not address the amounts shown for the integrity management tracker deferral. Please explain why this and other non-gas items such as customer utilization tracker are reflected in other cost of gas.
The IMT, the cut deferral, and the cut increment and decrement represent the amounts associated with the deferrals and the riders that are recorded to the gas costs each month. So you can either book those rider deferrals to either the revenues or the cost of gas, and it has the same effect on the overall margin. So in this case, we show those cost of gas deferrals on a separate line on the other gas cost. And we kind of show it separate because it just makes it easier for us to reconcile the schedules to the rider balances. But this was started when we had the cut deferral in 2009, and we handled the IMT rider in the same way when it was established.
Okay, thank you. Now, Ms. Jackson, there were some questions we'd also like to ask of you, and then we're going to make sure our commissioners see if there are any follow-up you all might have of either of these witnesses. In your testimony regarding segmentation, you used an example which referenced primary firm bases and secondary firm bases, that specific terminology. Could you explain the difference between primary firm bases and secondary firm bases?
Yes, our primary firm would be the delivery points or the receipt points on our contracts that are identified as firm. But then you have secondary firm if it's in the path. So let's say that I have a Transco contract that flows from the Gulf to PSNC City Gate. Technically, secondary firm or in the path firm points are all along that path. So if the pipeline can accommodate those deliveries, they will on a secondary basis. You can also have secondary backhaul rights. So when you look at our contract path that goes all the way up, let's say to Station 165 on Transco, technically that flow is from the Gulf forward to Station 165, but you can request that gas be delivered backwards from Station 165 to PSNC. That is considered secondary. In the past, that gas has flowed. But as I've stated in my testimony over the last few years, with changes on Transco's system, it's been more and more difficult to rely on that type of secondary firm.
Thank you for that distinction and clarification. Now, is it possible to schedule deliveries on a primary firm basis from Columbia or Eastern or Texas Gas in the southward direction of the company's City Gate?
It is with our southeastern trail capacity.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Very good. And does segmentation help PSNC deal with congestion issues on Transco's pipeline?
It does from time to time. However, as I've stated, that over the last few years, since Transco's pipeline has become more bi-directional, which means flowing south to north mm-hmm. and north to south, it's been difficult for them to determine how much they can deliver on a secondary basis. So they have limited more and more of those volumes, particularly on shoulder days or peak days. So we're all relearning the system, but it has become less and less. We can't depend on it as much as we have in the past.
Okay. Now, referencing Jackson Direct Exhibit 1, there is an increasing deficit in the reserve margin starting with the upcoming winter season of 22-23. The deficit is increasing from 0.48% in 2022-23 to 14.61% in 26-27. Even if PSNC's plan for building a new LNG facility is successful, the plant won't be online until 2026, and you discussed some of this a bit earlier. How does PNC plan to deal with this dilemma? Particularly in terms of if PNC's plan for building a new LNG system is successful, but the plant won't be online until 2026.
Yes, sir, Commissioner McKissick. It is a concern of ours. We have been going out to the market with an annual RFP for winter peaking services, and that's what we have been filling the deficit with for the last couple of years. However, you see that we have 5,000 outstanding, and that's why it's a negative 0.48%. After the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the natural gas market turned upside down. And so we saw prices that we have seen at very stable levels, let's say around the $3 mark, they are now trading at $6, $7, $8. And particularly in the Transco zone that PSNC sits in, which is Zone 5, we have very little supply. We have absolutely no supply that's actually sourced in Zone 5, but we are constrained as far as how much supply can get into Zone 5. We thought with ACP and with MVP,
we were going to be getting 4.5 to 5 BCF of new gas supply. That hasn't happened. Because of litigation, these pipeline projects, ACP has been canceled, MVP has been severely delayed. And so you see that now we here in North Carolina are paying prices on a Zone 5 delivered basis higher than what New York is paying. And it's because we are constrained due to litigation. So it's going to be more and more difficult to find those assets. So we have been negotiating with our existing peaking suppliers to see if they're willing to roll over those contracts or extend the terms of those contracts. We have been looking at capacity that may be available in small amounts on the interstate pipelines. We try to pick up what we can. And we are in ongoing discussions with all of our existing pipeline providers and anybody else that may have some type of supply option, whether it be supply from an LNG facility that they could resource or source to us in the winter, or if we could contract for a short-term winter peaking option. But there's a lot of competition in the market right now because everybody is waiting on new assets to be able to serve this Zone 5 market.
And that kind of is a great lead into this next question. Given your experience and knowledge of interstate pipelines, are you aware of any congestion issues on Transco's pipeline in Zones 4 and 5? And what are your thoughts about operational issues involving gas transportation on Transco systems to any new gas-fired electric generating plants in North Carolina? Kind of answer the first part first and then move into the second if you could.
I have had numerous discussions with Transco over the last 8 years regarding operational flexibility and how it has diminished on their system. In my opinion, the bi-directional flow on Transco systems should provide more flexibility to its shippers, but we have seen less flexibility. And I think a lot of that goes back to you can't look at a bi-directional system in terms of how the engineers designed the actual infrastructure. You have to look at how gas flows on a daily basis. And we call the null point of where that the two flows, south to north and north to south, meet each other. That moves all along the borders of South Carolina and North Carolina. So in my opinion, the companies here in North Carolina should give Transco the opportunity to source gas to us multiple different ways, but we have not seen that. And we have seen greater constraints on Transco's system than ever before. And I do think that has to do with these new projects that came on as bi-directional and no new storage was added to their system. So Transco's having a difficult time balancing all the imbalances on their system. And we have seen what we call bracketed operational flow orders where we're having to stay within a certain tolerance. You can't be more than this percentage short and you can't be more than this percentage long. So it makes it very difficult for the shippers to stay in those bounds, but that's what Transco is having to do, they say, to balance their system.
And I guess the second part was dealing with the potential that's been discussed about new gas-fired electric generating facilities, and what are your thoughts about if that were to occur, more or less as a hypothetical, but you have a great deal of experience, what that operationally might do to gas transportation system on Transco system?
It will be even more constrained. And Transco system is not designed, well, it has not been designed and it does not have the tariff provisions to allow for generation facilities to balance very easily. So as I talked about those bracketed OFOs where you have to stay in that one lane and you can't go too short, you can't go too long, that is difficult for a power plant because of mechanical issues that may occur. So we are in desperate need, I believe, of additional natural gas capacity. And natural gas capacity will help us retire coal-fired generation plants. That is what's needed. Not only will it retire those coal plants, but it will also support new renewable power production. If the wind's not blowing and the sun's not shining, natural gas works very well. We can come on very quickly to supplement the production that was anticipated from renewables. So until battery technology advances, natural gas is going to be needed to supplement renewable processes or in production. And I do think that we need that natural gas supply from that Marcellus region, because there is a definite discount that you see in the marketplace today from gas that flows in that Marcellus region compared to gas that flows from the Gulf Coast.
Let me ask you this. You're projecting right now, as I recall, 2% growth rate.
Yes, sir.
In demand. In light of the challenges that you've very articulately identified, what impact do you think that might have on that projected 2% growth in demand, how it might impact your cost, and likewise the availability issues dealing with natural gas?
I've always said that there is gas supply available, but at what cost? And what we're seeing, that particularly in our region, what we pay for Zone 5 delivered gas has gone up dramatically. So when you look at that $3 that we enjoyed for so many years, we're now looking at $8, $9, $10 a decatherm. And my fear is that in the wintertime, it could go even higher, because then you're going to see a dual peak. You're going to see a need for natural gas to support power generation, and you're going to see the traditional peak of local distribution companies that serve its gas customers. So we need new gas infrastructure. The LNG facilities provide for 10 days of supply, but for business development, how are we going to serve new economic development customers that will need gas year-round?
Do you think that projected 2% increase in growth and demand will diminish because of price considerations?
It could. We saw a slight decline in that 2008 to 10 time period, but we'll just have to see the impact of this and see how long it lasts. We're all sitting trying to figure out what's going to happen in these uncertain times. And we have never faced more outside influences from a global perspective. I think in the past we've had situations that impacted us from a domestic situation. I think of Hurricane Katrina and Rita that impacted the Gulf Coast region. That was a domestic issue that impacted our pipelines. But now when you see that Europe has such a great demand for natural gas and for coal, and how that's impacting prices worldwide, it's a new era that we're having to deal with. It's very much impacted by the geopolitical problems we have worldwide.
Thank you for your responses to those questions. Let me see if fellow commissioners have additional questions. Commissioner Brown-Bland.
Good morning. Good to see you. And in person, too. So a little bit of a follow-up. So the Zone 4 and Zone 5 congestion issues and resulting higher costs, how are we comparing to the other zones? Is this area being disadvantaged in pricing?
Yes, ma'am, we are. We talked about that with Transco's tariff changes associated with their priority of service and how we're having to cash out now in Zone 5 for our imbalances. We do not have supply available in Zone 5, so we have to bring in supply from Zone 4 or Zone 6 into Zone 5. So because of that, and because of the constraints and the growth, we're very blessed to have growth. You know, if you look across the nation, some of the other LDCs have no growth or negative growth. So we're in a region that continues to grow. We have very favorable economic development. So we have growing demand and no new supply. So it's simply an economic equation. You have more demand on one side and no new supply on the other. And that's why we talk about the apples to oranges comparison. Yes, a 10-day supply from LNG facilities does serve to meet the needs of our firm design day. However, you also have to look at what type of growth you have from commercial and industrials. And since the polar vortex event of 2014, we have seen more and more industrial customers convert from interruptible sales to firm sales. So how do we handle that dilemma going forward is the real challenge.
But as I understand it, the gas supply is available, but we have the transmission issue.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
That puts this area at a distinct disadvantage compared to its neighbors.
Yes, ma'am. It doesn't do you any good. We have this tremendous
natural resource that sits, quite frankly, pretty close to us, but we don't have the means to get it here. I mean, I think of that, you think of seeing a gorgeous chocolate shake, in my opinion, but I don't have a straw to get to it. And that's really what we're faced with, is we see the supply availability, and we know that that supply will be discounted from what we see today in the Gulf Coast. But we have, the litigation surrounding new pipeline projects has delayed and canceled projects that were severely needed in this region.
And so our customers, business, industrial, as well as residential, are paying a higher price based on this lack of a straw.
Yes, ma'am.
And that also applies, except to the extent people are locked in with some long-term arrangements, but that would also apply to our electric utilities as customers for gas.
Yes, ma'am, and I think it would still impact them on the days. We can't lock in to 100% on a long-term basis, whether you're a power plant or an LDC. It's really not prudent to lock into 100% of your forecasted needs because of weather changes, mechanical changes, customer demands changes. So you might lock into a percentage of your forecasted load on a long-term basis, but you're going to be out there buying daily or monthly what that additional need is going to be that you may have forecasted due to growth, due to weather fluctuations, and so there will be an increase in cost.
Are you familiar with just in the world today, and if you're not, say so, but are you familiar with any with this affecting business decisions about putting plants and operations here in the Zone 5 area?
I don't know that I know any specifically, but I think that there is a concern because, especially with power generation, how are we going to support the conversion of coal-fired generation to something that emits less carbon? Right now, the answer is natural gas and renewables, and they work in tandem together. Natural gas will support new renewable generation. Until battery technology moves further along, you're going to have something to back up those renewables in order to ensure reliable power generation. And the answer is natural gas today.
All right, thank you. And then in terms of the delay with MVP, are you following the Inflation Reduction Bill that we now think is going to pass? And do you know, if you know, whether there's impact there that might be of assistance with MVP?
I have been following the bill very closely. I am cautiously optimistic because we haven't seen the final form until it passes the House. So once we see the details associated with the bill, the final bill that's passed, then we can evaluate what kind of positives that will impact, hopefully not just MVP, but other pipeline projects in the future. So as I said, we're cautiously optimistic.
If it were to pass close to what you see today or what you think you see today, would it change the projections that you now see for MVP, or we would still be looking at beyond, I think it's 2026?
Well, let me clarify on that. MVP made a filing at FERC to extend their in-service date to 2026, their construction timeline. Typically, when a new pipeline project is approved by FERC, they are given 4 years to complete construction. This is unprecedented because not only were they given the 4 years, they were given a 2-year extension and it's still not finished. So they have gone back and asked for an extension of that typical 4-year period. However, MVP has not updated their projected in-service date of the second half of 2023. They just didn't want to have to go back and continue to file these 2-year extensions. So I hope that we see the in-service to be that second half of 2023. And we're hopeful, cautiously optimistic, that this new bill will encourage that and help support that. And I do think what it could do, based on its final form, is it could help Southgate, which is that second piece that can begin construction after the MVP mainline is constructed.
And if I'm understanding correctly, none of MVP is in operation today, right?
No, ma'am. It's about 94% complete.
Complete. And does that, you've been following the FERC proceedings when they pop up, is that completion rate, if you know, if you don't, but has it been stated anywhere that the completion rate had anything to do with the willingness to grant the extensions?
I think FERC had approved the project, and litigation of that, of different permits, has held up construction. So in the eyes of FERC's approval, they've met their requirements. And FERC really has no, they have no, they can't change the litigation timeline. There is no known length or timeline associated with litigation. And so that's why I think that they went in and asked, MVP went in and asked for a 4-year, which is that normal time for a certificate to be completed. So we're in unprecedented times. I've been in this business for 30 years. And I used to say that a FERC, an interstate pipeline project under FERC's jurisdiction would take roughly 3 years from the time we filed, or the time they filed an application to the in-service date. Then we moved to 5 years. Then I moved to 7 years. And now I'm going on 8 years with MVP. So it's just, we haven't seen anything like this litigation. And it's just continual.
And I'm understanding that MVP, as a result of the Court of Appeals decisions, is planning to make amendments and attempt to go back and get the permit. Okay.
We're just so close.
Going back to Mr. Metz's testimony regarding an economic analysis, that section of his testimony, and you explained about cost benefit and the difficulties there, but in terms of his recommendation that there be a detailed economic analysis and that this commission direct you, the company, to file such, et cetera, is the company in agreement?
Yes, ma'am. As we stated in G100 sub 91, the order in that docket, it requires us to come back before the commission and public staff to make you aware of any capacity decisions that we may be working on, and we have done so. We see this as a collaborative effort, so we want to make sure that you're abreast of any changes in the industry, and as our plans become a little bit more definitive, we'll be glad to come back and update both the commission and public staff.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, but as I stated before, the economic analysis where you compare multiple options is not there today. We are looking at whatever we can get that will be available in a known time period to meet our design day requirements. I've never seen anything like this where I couldn't bring before you 2, 3, 4 options to say, this is what we looked at. I mean, we looked at advancing our LNG strategy because what else is there? A lot of pipelines are very reluctant now to look at any type of project that's going to go back to that Marcellus region because of what we've seen between ACP and MVP. It's very costly, and the timeline is unknown.
So, and then just as a follow-up to Witness Metz's testimony, is there anything from his testimony that you'd like to respond to or shed any light on, any further insight for us?
No, ma'am, we agreed. We had a few conversations. I was on 2 of those myself related to the design day methodology. And as he stated in his testimony, Piedmont and PS&C have slight differences with the way they calculate their design day. Our methodology is different. The systems that we use for the regression analysis is different. But that doesn't mean that they're not prudent. It's just 2 ways of getting to a design day calculation. So we went through all the details. We had our resource planning folks on the phone and went through in great detail how PS&C calculates its design day. So in the end, we agreed that no changes should be made at this time.
All right. We appreciate those efforts on the basis of our order. We saw that, and we, you know, wanted some comparison so that we had better understanding. And then finally, Witness Dorgan, this might, whoever can answer, but he discussed about the secondary market transactions. And if I'm reading correctly, and I may not be, so feel free to correct me, but he had a table on page 11 of his testimony. If I'm looking at that correctly, the secondary market transactions are increasing. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And can you shed light from the company's point of view on the drivers of that increase and
yes,
why
ma'am.
It's up?
When you look at capacity release, asset management, those are based on volatility in the marketplace. So if you look at what we've seen this year, we have not seen volatility like this in nearly a decade. So as the price of natural gas fluctuates, and I mean, it's been a long time since I saw natural gas fluctuate the way it has on a daily basis. That's when the value for capacity release and the asset management agreements increase. So that's why you're seeing that. I hope long-term, if we can get additional capacity to flow and we get some more of that shale gas supply, it'll come back down. But I think what you see in the world today is that something is needed to supplement or to back up renewable energy production. And the answer is natural gas if you want something that reduces carbon emissions. So we've been talking about this for several years, that without new infrastructure, costs could go up because you have to be able to deliver the supply to the demand regions. And without pipeline capacity, you can't do that.
And back to the fluctuation, I meant to ask, but that fluctuation you still see?
Yes, ma'am. I got the latest prices, the closing prices on NYMEX yesterday, and the September's trading at 761, the winter strip is at 739, and the 12-month strip is at 633.
So even the increased level is not stabilizing?
No, ma'am. And we see fluctuations on a daily basis. When you see dramatic changes in weather, you'll see fluctuations, and part of that is when you look at our national storage level for our inventory of natural gas supplies, we're below the five-year average. So that coupled with weather changes can create short-term spikes in the daily cost of gas.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Camerite.
Yes, good morning, Ms. Jackson.
Good morning.
And thank you for your testimony and all the information that you provided to the commission. I agree with what you have said about it being that we are in uncertain and unprecedented times, and I appreciate yours and PSNC's efforts to try to find solutions for the constraints that we have for supply and capacity. So my question is going to be really kind of at a higher level and really looking for clarification. You talked about meeting in these kind of uncertain and unprecedented times, meeting the demand that we have in North Carolina will require an increase in cost. And I think we all understand that. But for clarification, is there any concern about actually being able to meet the demand, setting aside the costs, but is there concern that demand requirement will not be met?
As I stated earlier, mm-hmm. there has never been a time in my career where we could not get natural gas delivered, and I have faced the devastation of Hurricane Katrina and Rita. We have had problems with compressor stations along the Transco line where we had they had to send men and women out to make sure that those compressors were not frozen. They had to manually man those sites because of the polar vortex event of 2014. So I've seen a lot over the 30 years, and I've always said, and I'm an accountant by trade, so I've always said there will always be natural gas available, but what will you pay for it? Because I believe in economics, and it's purely an economic decision. Now, how high can that price get? In 2014, we saw prices above $100 a decatherm. That's a lot. But today, when you look at the requirements for gas, for power generation to reduce its carbon emissions, the requirements for the entire natural gas industry to reduce our emissions, our carbon emissions, the demand is going to continue to grow in the power sector. So how do you balance continual growth from the LDC perspective with continual growth on the power sector? And as I stated, renewables are needed, but natural gas backs up those renewables. So I believe to serve our customers reliably on both an electric and a gas system, we're going to need additional natural gas infrastructure, whether that be interstate pipeline infrastructure, LNG facilities that are on system. I believe it's going to be a combination of both. And we PSNC as a company, we have utilized both in the past. We have our existing carry facility that's our own LNG facility that enters into our distribution system, while we also have a number of contracts on the interstate pipelines. Currently, we're only served by Transco, so it would be nice to have a second interstate pipeline that feeds into North Carolina.
So I guess to kind of summarize what I think you're saying is that unprecedented times that you can't make guarantees that you would have been able to make throughout your career, and that there are solutions that you believe are available, but they're not here today. So there's just tremendous uncertainty about whether, frankly, whether demand can be met, although PSNC is making every effort to do so. Is that a correct summary of your thoughts?
I think it's easier on the LDC side to find options to meet growing demand, and we're looking at all of those options, okay, whether it be a mobile facility, some type of bridge to get us to our LNG facility or to new interstate pipeline capacity. It's harder in the power sector because you're looking at a much larger number. Just for instance, we grow at 20,000 decatherms a year. One of those power plants would need 400,000 decatherms a day. So it's 20,000 a day versus 400,000 a day. So there's a big disparity in the volumes. So that's what I'm saying. And so when you see that type of demand that is in the marketplace in the power sector, that's competing with what I need on the LDC side.
Right.
So it's easier to fulfill my volumes, but my costs are going to go up because of competition.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we can say that we appreciate PSNC's efforts to work through these problems and try to procure the capacity and the supply at the least cost that's available, considering the circumstances.
Thank you.
All right. Just one last follow-up. And I know the public staff had indicated they supported the idea that the company considered filing this fall for approval to implement an adjustment to the benchmark commodity cost of gas price and an adjustment to its all customers' deferred account. What are your thoughts about that request?
We agreed with that. We are looking at those balances on a monthly basis, and we do agree that we are probably going to increase the benchmark in the fall.
Okay, thank you. Now we'll see if there's any questions on commissioners' questions. Mr. Neal.
Thank you, Presiding Commissioner McKissick. Ms. Jackson, in response to a number of questions, you stated to back up renewables that the answer is natural gas, isn't that? This is the answer you gave a number of times.
Yes, sir.
And you've mentioned you're an accountant by training, is that right?
Yes, sir.
And you work for a gas company, is that right?
Yes, sir.
Have you ever performed any kind of resource planning analysis for an electric public utility?
I provide inputs to the resource planning for Dominion Energy South Carolina.
So you provide
the gas for.
Pardon my interruption. But you have not yourself done a complete resource planning exercise for an electric public utility that would evaluate gas versus something like battery storage or pumped hydro at various cost assumptions, have you?
I have seen some of those cost assumptions, and I'm basing it on also the ability for natural gas units
to ramp up and down very quickly without the type of mechanical issues that a coal-fired plant may have. Coal-fired plants are designed to be baseload plants, so it's very difficult for them to go up and down.
And to be clear, I'm not asking you about coal-fired power plants today. I just wanted to clarify that your opinion was not based on having done something like, you know, what's before the commission in E-100 sub 179. You're not a party in the E-100 sub 179 docket, are you?
Which docket is that?
That's the carbon plan docket.
I believe we're an intervener in that docket. No, I'm sorry.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Public staff have any questions?
Yes, Your Honor, just one question. Would you agree that an economic analysis also evaluates the cost of loss of firm supply to customers?
Are you talking about line loss?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, but our design day calculation occurs at the interconnection between Transco and PSNC Citygate, so the losses are already grossed up to that point.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Is there any redirect?
No redirect.
All right. And do you have any motion related to exhibits or anything?
Yes, sir. I'd like to make two, if I may.
Go right ahead.
The first is that I'd like to move Ms. Jackson's three exhibits and Ms. Krill's two exhibits to her direct and supplemental testimony and evidence.
Without objection, so allowed.
And the second is Mr. Neal asked that the commission take judicial notice of Mr. Lander's testimony in PSNC's last annual review of gas costs, which was G5 sub 635. We'd also request that the commission take judicial notice of all the testimony filed in that proceeding.
Without objection, so allowed.
Thank you, sir.
And does the public staff have any testimony to put on or motions?
Yes, Commissioner McKissick. I'd like to first correct the record to correct my co-counsel's name. I am appearing today with John Little, not David Little.
Duly noted.
I don't know who David Little is.
Appropriately duly noted for the record.
Thank you. And at this time, Chairman McKissick, I move the admission. I request that the testimony of Dustin Metz, consisting of 8 pages, be copied into the record as if given orally from the stand, and that his Appendix A be admitted into evidence. I move that the testimony of Sean Dorgan, consisting of 14 pages, be copied into the record as if given orally from the stand, and that his Appendix A be admitted into evidence. I move that the testimony of Sonia R. Johnson, consisting of 6 pages, be copied into the record as if given orally from the stand, and that her Appendix A be admitted into evidence. And finally, I move that the testimony of Jordan A. Nader, consisting of 7 pages, be copied into the record as if given orally from the stand, and his Appendix A be admitted into evidence.
Without objection, your motion is allowed. Are there any other matters to come before the commission this morning? Hearing none, as commission's customary practice, briefs and proposed orders will be due in 30 days after the transcript is prepared. If there's nothing further, we hereby stand adjourned. Thank you for being here.